Welcome to the Careless Talk Climbing Podcast with myself, Aidan Roberts, and my co-host, Sam Pryor.
Hello.
Today, we were interviewing Sophia Yokoyama. So she's a Swiss climber. I used to compete with her. She was actually in the same age category as me. So I used to know her when I was much younger. And quite recently, she just wrote an Instagram post publicizing some of her struggles with climbing and food and the potential of eating disorders and like her journey with that. And really, if you haven't read that post, it's really worth a read. And she opened up very personally to the climbing community to try and like help people communicate about such a sensitive subject. So we thought it was a really good opportunity to talk to her and give her a bit of space to like maybe describe this experience in a more detailed manner. So it makes up a lot of the discussion. It's like obviously a vast topic, so we could only like pick into a few areas, but hopefully it's helpful and valuable for anyone who has had similar struggles. We also spoke about Sophia's introduction to YouTube, and she was definitely a character in the early days of YouTube vlogging and now has her own channel. And so we discuss a little bit about that and shine a positive light on climbing competitions, which is somewhat of a rarity on this podcast. So yeah, it's a really nice discussion, and yeah, hope you enjoy it and learn a few things.
Great. And that leaves it to me to give our Patreon a little shout out. If you enjoy the podcast and would like to support us, we do actually have a Patreon page. So if you check that out, I'll put a link in the show notes. We've got a couple of tiers. One of the tiers allows access to a bit of extra deleted scenes and stuff from the podcast, and also from sneak updates from Aidan's adventures. And the other tier also includes access to our Discord channel. And we've got a really nice community of people in there. So we have a constant kind of chat going on about all things climbing, but also you get a heads up as to who the next guest will be, and you can suggest questions and things. The other thing I actually wanted to say was that I think it'd be really fun to put together a story time episode. So if you happen to have a really good crag story, yes, shoot me a message on Instagram if you'd be willing to come on and tell us the story. It'd be really fun to collate a episode of just people telling us funny crag stories. You don't have to be, you know, a really good climber or anything, just someone who's had something funny or interesting happen to them at the crag. Just yeah, shoot me a message, let me know.
Oh, it's like a storytelling episode.
Yeah, story time.
I didn't know you were gonna say that, but
yeah, because I didn't know until halfway through you're saying, but I've been meaning to put that together. So
yeah, well, we spoke about like having some story episodes, but didn't know it's gonna open up submissions. Yeah. But yeah, great idea. Yeah, send in your stories.
if you've got a good story, let us know and you come on and you can tell it to us, and yeah, we'll release it. That'd be good fun.
Yeah, sounds great.
All right, cheers for listening.
Thank you all. Well, yeah, should we jump right in with, yeah, are you still competing?
Yeah.
Doing the World Cup season this year?
Yep, so we're leaving in like 2.5 weeks to go to Japan.
Yeah, it's Japan and Korea, isn't it?
Yeah, so we're leaving a week before, and then we head to Japan, Korea. And then depending on the result, I'll be able to do the rest of the season. But
oh, is that how it works? You need to, you basically, depending on results, then you get the option to keep going.
Yeah, otherwise you get shut down and season done then.
Right.
Oh, really?
How big's the Swiss team? How many places are?
It's not that big actually. For the women's, we have 5 spots for bouldering. So like it's the whole, there's enough space for the whole bouldering team for the women. So, I mean, even if we don't necessarily get the results, maybe we can negotiate. Because I mean, the world champs are in Switzerland, so I'm guessing they want to send as many people as possible. But for the guys, they've only got 2 spots in bouldering, so it's kind of like it was a fight for a lot of the athletes.
Is that from last season?
No, they had, so Sasha's pre-selected because he's like trying to do the combined, So they technically only have one spot left, and they had the two comp selections like 2 weeks before and then another, and like based on our result at a Swiss Nationals.
Okay, yeah. But the women have 5 bouldering spaces in the World Cups because of last year's result.
Yeah. Because of last season, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Is it top 30 or something? Gets
a top 40 even? Yeah, top 40. Yeah, the men, it really didn't go well.
Oh, no. Oh, wow. Okay. It seems quite, I guess everyone has every country has their own way of doing it. But I guess if they then don't send you to a World Cup, there's just like, they're just not filling their quota in World Cups, right?
Yeah. Like, and it's, I mean, why not? I mean, okay, they've got the like financial side that they need to think about, but may as well fill up the spot. So then we have, because I guess I'm not sure exactly how it works, but every year, depending on the points, you might get reduced spots for your team or more spots. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you the more people you have going, surely top 40 results would just keep your team, you being able to send more people anyway.
Yeah, the top 40 thing makes it so you might as well send as many people as possible to get as many bites at the apple. But do you guys get like financial support then?
Yeah, so if you're selected for the comps, they pay for everything except for like food when we're there, because depending on like if we're like sharing Airbnb and everything, then it's usually the team that takes it, because then it's a bit complicated. But if we're at the hotel, they usually pay for like the breakfast, but then lunch and dinner is taken on us. And but otherwise the rest, like flights, hotel, Airbnb is paid for.
That's why better than most teams.
Yeah. Well, GBT. I was talking to Max and Nathan. They were like, last year in Salt Lake, they were like, yeah, we got to pay for everything. I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. Then it would be really crazy not to send people to events.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when they're not paying for it.
Yeah.
And yet that actually happened, didn't it?
If
they're not even paying, may as well send as many athletes.
And so you're hoping to do the whole circuit this year if all goes well?
Bouldering, yes, except for Salt Lake. They're not sending anyone for Salt Lake because it's kind of like a 4-day trip, 24 hours away, more or less, traveling and then jet lag and all of that for just 4 days, which kind of makes sense to not send anyone. But then otherwise the rest of bouldering I'd like to do, and then the world champs, and then depending on how things go, maybe lead, but that will be, I'll see you later on then.
Future you to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, and Japan, and you've got the whole dealing with jet lag to contend with as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so luckily we're leaving a week before.
Oh, nice. That's smart.
Yeah. Because I was like, if we're going for like 2 comps anyways, may as well leave in advance. They're like, yeah, we'll probably do that. I was like, great.
And you also then get to actually experience a bit more of a country and a bit of culture.
Yeah.
And that's kind of nice. Yeah, because that was often one of my like struggles with like some of the World Cups. You just like fly in and then you wouldn't even... it's like clinical, isn't it? You just get dropped in, nearly get up some bits of plastic and then it takes you away.
Korea last year, it was like we arrived like day before the comp, and so we were like, yeah, we should still kind of like visit a bit, but with jet lag and everything, it was
exhausted.
We just kind of like walked around where the hotel was, but like Seoul is huge. I wanted to like see way more, but
maybe this year you got maybe more time.
Yeah, and what we really lack on all our podcasts that we've done with comp climbers is some comp climbing positivity. We basically speak to people who have just retired, whether or not we knew they'd just retired, or they've been a little bit down on the comp season. Mm-hmm. So we've got a bit of a reputation now for like hating on comps. It'd be great. It'd be great if you say some kind of positive things about them.
Yeah. Well, no, for now, I'm still enjoying the comp. So I'll say some good positive stuff about comps in general, and I'm excited for the season, and especially like with the world championships being in Bern and at home, I'm like psyched this year.
Nice. And why is it you compete?
Big question there.
Big question.
Wow.
Straight into that's, like the deep question.
Yeah. Wow. Like, why do you climb, Sam?
Oh. How long have you got?
Because yeah, that's like, that's a hard question.
Yeah, yeah, and like I've thought about it a lot, and I mean, like I enjoy like climbing in general. It's fun, and like you want to always try to challenge yourself and do better. But I feel like just the pressure of comps is also really exciting, and I guess it's just, especially like with comps, it's you're coming onto the mats and you don't know what you're expecting every single time, and it's, I kind of see it as like a game, like you're coming out, it's a little surprise, and you want to try to like beat whatever the route setters have put up, and it's more like fun, but at the same time like a bit stressful and spicy, and so it just like continues to, like not knowing what you're going to expect kind of like gets me motivated to get back into training and to work on then like all of my weaknesses, and I'm like, okay, well, kind of suck at toe hooks. I got a this border I didn't start because it was like a toe hook, whatever. So I got to go back and hopefully be better for toe hooks. And then something new comes out and you're like, okay, well, going to have to work on that. Like they started crack climbing in comp. So it's like, okay, got to learn those hand movements. And yeah, it's kind of, I feel like the surprise, the element of surprise, and just it's always changing. And yeah, you got to keep up at training and it's fun and exciting.
Yeah, it's very varied, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
And training in general is very varied. Like I'm never usually doing the same thing. Like okay, you can always campus boarders, but it's always going to be different campus boarder or different exercises. And yeah,
nice perspective on comps. Quite playful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just trying to get some positivity out there.
Yeah, no.
I hope that helps.
It's really good. Yeah, because no, that is nice. And do you find like, because comps are intense as well as like being like, because they're not like mutually exclusive, as well as like being like quite fun and like interesting and kind of inspires like, yeah, maybe completeness in your like climbing skill set. They are also really intense atmospheres. Like you've got a clock ticking and like you've like invested so much like to be there. Is like that something which you kind of find is like a limited, like does that feel like part of the interest and like the intrigue of comps, or is that like one of the limitations which you like kind of have to endure to do the comps? Like
yeah, I feel like the, like, especially if you travel halfway across the world for like, when you think of it, it's only 25 minutes of climbing if you actually only do qualies. And so that's kind of the part that can get me sometimes frustrated. I'm like, oh, if I had 2 minutes extra, I probably would have done that border. But then at the same time, it's like, okay, well, then I need to just get better at sending boulders quicker. So it's kind of like taking the positive and the negative and just trying to make it into more positive. But for sure that like, yeah, traveling halfway across the world to climb 25 minutes to have the worst round ever to then have to watch semis and finals and be like, oh, I'm so jealous, can sometimes be hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Inevitably, yeah.
But when you're in isolation, what is it you're hoping to come out and see? Like what's the perfect type of boulder for you?
I always like the physical overhang. But also like nothing that kind of like, of course, physical we love, but nothing also like, usually I also come out of comps, it's also like kind of finding excuses, but I'm like, oh, if I was just like 5 centimeters taller, I probably would have done that. And nothing where it's like, but like a dyno, which is just straight upwards, hate. Like I love dynos, but if it's just straight and nothing like complex, I'm like, okay, well then this is just pure pushing. And if you're like 20 centimeters taller, it's so much easier in brackets. But so yeah, varied, nothing like height advantage, really physical. And then a good slab. Like I love now the more technical slabs than like a dyno slab.
Mm.
And then, wow. Yeah.
It's funny because you described like quite a complete set of like
That was quite plans. That makes me think you're quite a generalist because you kind of said a bit of everything there.
I used to hate slabs, but I was forced to slab climb every training session when I was with the team, and so now I've actually come to enjoy it. So if there's like a complicated slab, I'm just like, okay, let's see what I can do. And usually I don't really move a lot in it, but it's kind of just like challenging anyway. So I enjoy it at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's quite like, it can be satisfying. I noticed like a strong absence of the crack climbs in that description. Not so pleased that they've reared their heads.
Not really into that, or at least not yet, but...
Yeah. Nah, me neither, to be fair. I think it's an acquired taste, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, for now, I don't think we've had... Like, I've seen... It's usually the men's have got the crack climbs. I don't think we've really had anything at the moment. And I hope it stays that way.
Yeah, it was... The first appearance was in Switzerland, wasn't it?
Yeah, Meiringen. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they've been dining out on the success of that ever since, though, because they did that. And it was really funny, and it was really good value. But then since then, getting diminishing returns, I think.
Yeah. No need to add more.
Yeah,
it worked really well in that format because it, like, made a distinct winner. And, like, it was, like, so obvious and clear that he was much better at crack climbing.
And then I loved how, like... After that, you had like the Japanese having like little lessons from had a mantra on how to crack climb and all of that.
Yeah, workshops and it'll never show up again.
I've got something that I like to ask people who are involved in comps, as well as where you compete. So there's more heavy hitters. What do you make of the Discovery Plus system? This is gonna be. Because I think in Switzerland it might still be free, but you know, for the paywall behind watching comp climbing, is it still free in Switzerland? I got a feeling I just watched it when I was in Switzerland for free, but
like on Discovery Plus or like on YouTube?
I can't remember. It was
on. It might be on YouTube. I'm not sure
because I don't think we at least. I don't think we have it. For free on YouTube.
Okay. Oh, that's good. That means the question makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I personally am against like the idea of Discovery Plus and all of that. I just kind of feels like it's just closing opportunities because like I've talked to a lot of other people and everyone that I've personally talked to are like, yeah, well, I guess I'm just not going to watch comps anymore. And on one side, okay, you may have a lot of more viewers that just like kind of land on climbing and like are interested in watching. But I feel like the people who are actually really interested, you kind of like lose that by making it, having it being paid. And like, I personally wouldn't sign up to like Discovery Plus or whatever. I just get a VPN. Like I sign up for a VPN because I feel like that's more useful for me. In general, like if you go to comp in China, then you can use your VPN to continue watching series or whatever. But I wouldn't sign up for Discovery Plus anyways. So it's like, okay, kind of like also loses the concept of making it payable if you sign up for a VPN. And I feel like a lot of people are doing that. So
yeah, I know of a lot of people who have VPNs and nobody who actually signed up for Discovery Plus.
I feel like their idea was to kind of get more people who were already maybe signed up on Discovery Plus and like these other channels that Eurosport, I think.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah, it's just climbing was increasing, or like the popularity of climbing has been increasing quite significantly, right? In recent years, it seems a shame to do something that would maybe like. Inhibit that.
And like especially if like they sold the TV rights, if you had seen some change from the IFSC, like maybe in prize money or like more comps or I don't know, something that would like make, like, develop climbing, like, make it bigger and better, but they, nothing whatsoever has changed. So it's like, okay, what's happening with all that extra money?
Yeah.
So, yeah, where's it gotten to?
Yeah, so,
disconcertingly opaque when it came to what they were actually going to do with the funds, weren't they?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I'm kind of more or less against it. But we'll see how that develops.
Yeah, I kind of, there was some, because they tried it in the past, didn't they? And there was massive kickback, and then they opted out of it. And then last season, they just actually continued. So yeah. I assume it's still going ahead this year. It's like a few years of the contract, isn't it?
Yeah, wasn't it a 3-year contract, I think?
Yeah, kind of snuck under the radar. So yeah, at least another 2 years.
Mm. And I was like talking to someone about like prize money and comps. They're like, oh yeah, so like how much do you win if like you come first in a comp? It must be huge. I'm like, no, it's like 2,000 euros. And I'm like, what? It's like, yeah.
Yeah, because like I look at like American comps and like the cash prizes are like, huge. I don't know, like massive. Yeah. Like some comps you just like, that aren't even nationals or anything. You get like $10,000. Yeah.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Even like Ben Moon and like Jerry were winning more than that, like in the 90s.
Yeah.
There was a complete drop off. But at least it's coming back up again from the era of like, you win a chalk bag.
Yeah. There's been that tiny development, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, I got invited to a comp and they were like, yeah, the prize money is like 5,000 euros. I'm like, if I could come, I would have definitely come to try to get that. But unfortunately, I can't. But it's, yeah, 3,000 more than IFSC. But anyways.
Mm. Yeah.
That is actually something that people will be interested in. Is it 2,000 euros for winning a World Cup? Is that what it is?
I think so. Or at least last time I checked, that's what it said. And it was more before, but only the top six were paid. And now they brought it down to like the top eight. So that's their reasoning behind dropping the prize money.
Okay, yeah. So they haven't just put more money in.
Yeah.
They just split it. You're not getting any of that Discovery Plus money.
none whatsoever.
What's happening to all of that? Yeah. Making a living out of climbing that, but not really many people are actually going to have any viable form of income through like IFSC prize money then, maybe other than Janja.
Yeah, who wins everything, yeah.
But yeah, then it's maybe like, oh, kind of good. But yeah. But yeah, it's like kind of prize money is actually probably only the only avenue where performance alone will get you paid for climbing. Because Sam, I think you brought this up in a discussion me and you had more recently. A role as a professional climber absolutely requires some like production of content in some form of another. Like you have almost become a brand as a character, essentially represent you like collaborate with companies, and that's like what they associate with that brand. And then you like have to produce some form of content, so you couldn't just be an amazing climber, never like tell anyone about it, make a living out of climbing. But prize money, you actually could, because you could just, people could know your name and literally nothing else about you, and you win all the World Cups and you could like get by with that. But maybe not the world of professional climbing these days.
Yeah.
I like the idea of that though. It'd be quite fun. And somebody nobody knows about winning everything.
Just winning everything, yeah. But it's like, especially if you need to pay to go to comps. Okay, you get the experience and the fun for comps, but if you don't like do finals or like earn any money at the end, it's just money that you're just seeing disappear slowly. And then, like you said, you need to start like kind of selling your image and like being more on social media, try to find like sponsors here and there to be able to finance all of that, and just kind of like, yeah, you're selling yourself to be able to pay to do what you love.
Yeah. It's definitely been the way, like, I don't know about many other countries, but like in the UK, definitely for like quite a few years, it's been pretty much the formula for like most competitors has been to kind of do some freelance work. There's been a few full-time climbers, but actually surprisingly few full-time climbers that just like climb and competition results alone. will like kind of like act as their like form of sponsorship. Like most people will do freelance work alongside it, like route setting or like coaching or something like that. And so then like your, like all your training and your like livelihood is all set up in order to like kind of arrive on these days where you have 25 minutes of climbing on the other side of the world and you've like basically lived your life to be there. Suddenly that's so intense. And I sometimes think that that can be quite also not that constructive. You've had to like invest so much of your life to be there as well. And then like it's already an intense environment. Is a recipe for making it slightly less fun in the long run.
Yeah. Maybe. Not only do you have to like put in tons of time and effort into training and like going hard on that, but you also need to think of like, okay, now what can I do on top of all of this time to be able to actually pay to get myself to the comps? And yeah, it's just like an extra thought that you just like start to stress about. And like, okay, well, if I actually can't get this money, then I can't go. And it's, yeah.
However, sorry, very quickly got myself down a negative rabbit hole there. Comps, they are fun.
Comps again.
We love them. You meet so many nice people. Like, they're so sociable. You can experience so many cultures. No, yeah, but they are, like, there is a lot of fun parts. I have loads of fond memories around comps as well. There's so many people that we've spoken to on this podcast that I know them because of my comp year, like yourself. Like it was doing comps I like kind of have met so many of these people, and like I have friends all over the world, which is kind of amazing. So there is like really positive aspects of comps as well, and like the experience, like the I think I really enjoyed about comps is like it was like a relaxing framework to like kind of really apply myself to. Like I had structure because there was like a date where I had to perform. And like you say, it gives direction to what you train because you have to be a generalist and good at like, if you're like really bad at toe hooks, like you said, you like need to train that. But if you're awful on pinches, you get better at pinches. And like it gives really nice structure and direction to your climbing, which I think is pretty special as well.
So, yeah, more positives.
We like comps as well.
there's of course, I mean, like if we also just look at the side of life is stressful in general too. Like if you're potentially not climbing, you're gonna have to pay, like you're gonna have to find a job anyways and pay your bills. So life is can be just as depressing sometimes.
Yeah.
To make it a global thing and not just comps.
Yeah. But, yeah, we could be here complaining about overtime and the stresses of that.
Well, but going back to something you said just now, Aiden, about how because I do see that the professional climbers are like shifting from, you know, it used to be people get more like brand deals and sponsorships, and that was how they would try and pay their way to do things. Mm-hmm. And now we are seeing more people going into kind of some form of media generation. And the big one by miles is YouTube for actual, like, I mean, I'm kind of saying YouTube, not Instagram, because Instagram doesn't really give you any foundation to actually monetize it or make any money from it, really. Yeah. Like, Instagram's basically for Instagram. But YouTube is the way that people actually can monetize it. And that is something that you've actually been involved in for quite a long time.
Yeah.
May I just say, very smoothly done there, Sam, to just carry that conversation into the questions we had.
Just segue it back.
Professional right there.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, great. You ruined it now, Aiden. But
you know, if you just wanted any validation for that, that was a great little... segue into YouTube.
yeah, because I did want to talk a little bit about YouTube, and actually one of our patrons wanted to ask you about your YouTube as well. So I guess, I mean, I haven't actually really asked you a question about it, but I guess like what is it that you like about YouTube and like making videos and things? Like what is it you're kind of going for?
So like you said, Instagram, to get money, you're going to have a brand that pays you and says, okay, you have to do this post and then you'll get this amount of money. And like, to be able to continue getting that money, you're just going to have to share and share and share. And that can sometimes be annoying to your followers. But YouTube, it's just ads that you can put in your video. And then that's just, I mean, like, everyone's used to ads on YouTube. So it's not like annoying anyone more than what it usually does. And so it's just like, in brackets, easy money. Especially like how I'm taking it is, I did have like the vision of starting YouTube to have like that second, to like get some money to help fund for comps and just like for the lifestyle in general. But then at the same time, I started finding it quite fun because it's also a different way of sharing things compared to Instagram. Like Instagram, it's usually like you have like a post or a small like reel video, and it's very just like compact. Although YouTube, you can go a lot more into detail, share more things, talk about more things, I feel like, and much more easily. And at the same time, get paid. So that was kind of like the vision I had starting YouTube. And now that I'm like kind of in it and like I really want to like get more regular into posting videos, I just really say like, okay, well, I have this training session this day at this gym. And on top of that, I can do like my training session. If I feel like filming it, add some spice to like make people want to watch it. But then at the same time, just like, okay, and then just climb an extra hour and then I can film this at the same time. So it's not like I have to go and put in extra effort to make a video. It's like, I'm going to the gym anyways. I'm training anyways. I may as well like film it because it could be interesting or not, or just stay a bit longer and like change things up. And so for me, doing it that way is just, and it's fun. And I learned how to like kind of use a camera and to edit. Now I luckily have someone else who's like filming me and editing my videos. So that's also like a lot less energy that I need to put into it. But yeah, that was kind of like my vision in starting YouTube.
Yeah, like, it's nice, isn't it? I love the amount of personality you get out of YouTube. You get an idea as to what people are actually like, whereas Instagram, you just don't. There's not enough like time.
Yeah, you can be a lot more yourself and share a lot more and talk about, like, you can have a 20-minute video just on like on YouTube. I love watching like what I eat in a day and stuff like that from like athletes that I look up to, or like their training regimes and stuff like that. And it's just, you get to kind of see like the personality behind it all, and yeah.
Yeah, there's like a, it is quite like a new form of like climbing media. Like, it wasn't long ago where, it was really wasn't that long ago where like climbing films were like professionally made, or like kind of would be in film festivals, or people would buy the actual films. Like you were saying there, you don't really have to go so far out of your way or like what you would do in your normal life. But that's also what people, this generation of like YouTube climbing media is looking for as well. It's kind of that lifestyle thing where you can kind of relate to these people who you see like competing on the World Cups or doing all these like hard climbs. You actually get a glimpse into their life. You don't want to almost change that for the sake of the video, because people are looking for like genuine kind of lifestyle content, as well as as well as like the very well edited, very well staged filmed. It's like a whole different genre, I feel. Actually, lots of the transition, because you featured in Eric's videos, right?
Yeah, how I started.
And they were almost like some of the very first climbing vlogs, I guess.
They were the first, weren't they?
Yeah. So yeah, is that somebody you learned a lot from, or like inspired by on that?
Yeah. For sure. Eric taught me a lot about YouTube, and he was really the one who was like pushing me. He was like, you should really start, because he, like, now there's a lot more like channels on YouTube about climbing. And I find that really cool to be able to like more people sharing like what climbing is about and trying to get more people into it. He was like, yeah, like right now there's a lot more also men in climbing on YouTube. And now slowly there's a lot more women coming up. And he was like, you should really like kind of get in now when it's still fresh and new. because he truly believes that YouTube will just like continue going up. And so I guess like if you're in it from the start and then just like kind of build up your community from there, and then as other people slowly start to get in, it just grows bigger and bigger, but then you still have your foundation. And yeah, but yeah, he definitely helped me a lot. He like gave me advice on like editing programs, cameras. Like at first I was filming with my phone because like cameras are really expensive. Yeah. And then just like, yeah, editing, like he told me kind of like things how to edit and then places where to get music and just like kind of, yeah.
Yeah. And now you have someone who, yeah, I'm still rocking the, I've got the phone balanced in the shoe. That's my current filming setup for yeah. most of my stuff.
I did that a lot. I did invest in a gimbal, like for the phone. So that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's not high, too expensive.
That's high tech. Yeah. Mm. I should probably upgrade from my iPhone 9 or whatever it is.
Yeah, but now iPhones are almost as expensive as like cameras.
Yeah. So, I've actually been really spoiled on that front. All of the people that I like collaborate with for a form of media are called Sam. And so like there's a YouTube channel in the UK called Wedge. My friend Sam Lawson like videos that, and then another Sam Pratt takes photos. So I've been so spoiled in that often they're just the people that I would choose to go climbing with and spend my time with anyway. These videos and photos just like appear so conveniently for me. And I mean, neither of them are able to be on this trip with me at the moment. And like, I kind of realized that I'm like, oh, damn, actually, I should probably remember film these climbs if I'm going from the start, because people might actually want to see them. And then it's like just a grainy pixel crap video, like balanced in some brambles. But I just took it for granted. It's logistically kind of quite hard to have well-made content on a regular basis.
Yeah, and especially if you're doing it yourself, there's also actually a lot to think about. You want the good angles. You're like, okay, well, how many like attempts do I want to really show? Or like, and then yeah, like depending on the quality, and if you like, you cut out your foot or your head or your hand, and it's like, a lot of things pile up.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, if you don't think about it in the first place, you kind of like learn from the mistakes in the past. You're like, okay, this time, full frame, whole body in, get this side so then you can see this move. And after a while, it's just like a lot to think about.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you going to make some videos about your World Cup season, or is it kind of difficult to do both at the same time?
So I did last year. I really did want to kind of like film. Like we flew to Korea and then we flew straight from Korea to Salt Lake. And so we were like more or less away a month with the team. And I really, really, like I did film a lot, but I didn't film like enough. Like it, once again, it's like you have to think about so much at the same time. And then at the same time, you need to think about the story. So I was kind of like filming random bits. And then I kind of put everything together. I'm like, this is going nowhere. Like all the important stuff I forgot to film about, because you're kind of like in the comp state, so you don't really necessarily think of it. And then when you do kind of want to film, you're like enjoying with your friends and all of that, and you're like, ugh, I really don't feel like filming right now. So you kind of also miss like the fun, genuine parts. And so it just felt kind of like empty. Even though I did have a lot of footage, it didn't like show the whole trip, which was kind of sad. So I'm going to bring my camera to Japan and Korea this time and kind of just like see, but I don't count on saying, oh yeah, you guys can potentially see a video coming out of me in Japan and Korea, because I don't want to have like the pressure of like thinking, oh, okay, now we're going to B-Pump. I need to film this. Oh, I need to film that. I need to do this. I need to do that. It's just too stressful.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Now there's the intrigue of the mystery that it may or may not show up as well.
Yeah, exactly. Will you see footage? Who knows?
Yeah.
Are you allowed to film in like isolation? Is that allowed?
I don't think you can bring cameras.
No.
Phones for sure aren't allowed.
I don't think you're allowed a camera or anything that connects to Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But also, aren't there like image rights with actual like the qualification climbs as well.
Yeah. Now you can't. That's what I was told. Like, you can't even film qualification and then even less semis and finals because of the TV rights that were sold.
You can't actually film anything. If you like created a series of films about your World Cups, they could contain anything apart from actually anything to do with the competition itself. It's quite hard to. Yeah, I think it is quite challenging. There used to be a load of people that would edit together like qualification highlights and things like that, but all of that is now not a thing. I don't know if you've seen people like Ondra, who are making videos. They can't. They have really high quality filmmaking teams, and they make these films, but they just can't show the actual comps. These videos about comps, you can't have any of the footage, which is quite crazy.
And once again, because of the TV rights that were sold, and you don't really see any change in the comps, so it's like. Okay, so not only can we not share, I mean, you can't share if you're getting paid, so I guess that's why you can't really share on YouTube, but you can on Insta, but yeah, it's still.
Yeah.
Still not great, is it? Especially because they don't even film the quality.
Yeah.
You can't watch it even if you wanted to, so.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. But we like comps, so it's fine.
We love comps. We will continue loving comps.
Yeah. Oh, nice. So, yeah, just around the corner, first World Cup. It's quite exciting. Yeah. How's training season gone?
It was going really, 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 really well until January. When I like injured, like you always get finger injuries throughout the training season. Like, it's not a training season without a finger injury, at least for me.
Yeah, sadly, it's very common.
And so January, it was going so well until I started feeling a little tweak in my left hand. Now my left hand is perfectly fine, but now it's my right hand. And it's like, even though it's small, it's still kind of like, brings you down mentally, because I was always like, oh yeah, this year I'm going to focus on finger strength. I want to get super strong. Like, I'm not saying I'm weak, but it's just I wanted to get stronger. And so the fact that I can't really crimp as hard as I want or train like weighted hangboarding as much as I want is kind of can also get quite frustrating. But then on the other side, like now I'm really good at slopers and pinches and other stuff. So I guess there's also a plus side. Yeah. But up until then the rest has been also quite good.
Yeah.
I mean, from the outside in, it looks like the slopers and the pinches come up more anyway.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed.
I actually think, like you were talking about, like the needing to be a complete generalist, almost makes training around injuries like a bit more applicable. So like I found lots of the things that I trained for out, it was never so good for me in comps because when I was based in the Lake District, most of my training was on my board where it's all quite crimpy. And even like the stuff where I was trying to get away from the crimps, I was still slightly flexed on pinches and I was on steep terrain. So a lot of force through the fingers. So I found if I had a finger tweak, basically just couldn't train properly at all, really restricted. Whereas I think I'd have been training well for comps. And like you say, you were talking about earlier about doing loads of slabs and stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's no shortage of things that you can work on.
Yeah.
With like a certain injury. There's always like a bunch of other stuff. You like sprain your ankle and you do loads of campus boulders and you tweak your finger and do loads of slabs and you just hope you don't do the both at the same time. and then I don't know.
Yeah. And that's what I was kind of like trying to focus on when I kind of started to feel the fingers. I was like, okay, look, it's fine. You can work on open hands because three fingers, I've never climbed three fingers my whole life. So I'm like, let's go. Three finger open drag. Let's get strong in those. And then slopers, I was also like you said, sometimes the pinches, I'd always be like half crimping the pinches. Now I'm like, okay, no, now it's full on sloper, full pinches, no cheating. And so I have progressed in that, but it is still like hard to like see a boulder that's got small crimps and you're like, ah,
I want to be on that.
I want a full crimp.
Damn it. Okay. So it's been slightly inhibited training season.
Yeah. But still feeling good. So
Ah, nice. Positive. It's always quite a... I always remember there's like... there's a lot of intrigue in, or a lot of anticipation for the first comps to know where everyone else is at, like everyone else's skill sets are, and where the setters are, like where their creativity is. Each season has themes. Last year, it suddenly got really powerful, or more powerful than it had been in like previous years or something. And you never really know what this like next theme is going to be. So, yeah, it's always quite an exciting time, I remember.
But, yeah, I've been talking to a few route setters who have like set for us in like simulation comps and all of that, and we'll see what comes up. But they're like, dual techs is going to be the big thing this year, of like dual techs feet. Like, we've seen a lot of those like sliding, like Emil did like a video of like just sliding across a dual techs volume and landing on a foot. And now in all videos that I've seen of athletes posting, there's always been dual techs somewhere in the water. So
standing on dual text, that's fun, isn't it?
Oh, my fear.
We love that.
Horrible.
Oh, I hate it. But anyways, we've had comps with just dual text, so I'm getting used to it.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. Wow, that's less fun. I remember a team training we had when I was doing comps, and there was a terrible dual text foothold that you had to stand on. It was like a big dual text sloper. Yeah. And Nathan took his climbing shoe on, took his climbing shoe off, and it was like, it looked easy.
Yeah,
but, I mean, you're not actually allowed to do that in comps, are you? But yeah. I can't like the creativity. I respect that anyway.
Yeah, it's also like, I remember we had like a training session with dual techs, and we weren't even putting chalk on our hands. We were more like, you want to spit? It's kind of gross, but you're spitting on your hands. Like, okay, let's stick.
Yeah, it's going a bad way, isn't it? Where like suddenly people start spitting on their hands.
Yeah,
on
take their shoes off.
That would be a bit gross, yeah.
Back to COVID, let's go.
Yeah. Oh, damn, I'm the 100th competitor out on this qualifying block, and it's just... Yeah, caked in.
Not only have you waited like 8 hours in ISO, but now you've just got spit on holds
and toe grease and oh god, it's a nightmare.
Should we move on from the comps? Have you got any more questions there, Aiden?
No. It was good. Okay. Well, good, we'll positive.
Yeah.
View on comps.
Hopefully allay some of those criticisms that we get.
Sam will edit out all of those positive bits.
Only positive.
I'll leave in the bit where someone's complaining and then just cut everything else.
Yeah, this happens every time. We like to talk for like a little bit about how like the negative parts of comps, and then loads about how positive it is, and Sam just cuts it all out. He's just he's in the bad bits. Shuns all the comps.
Don't need them in it.
Right. Yeah. So you recently posted this like pretty hard hitting Instagram post, which is what like I saw that and I was like, wow, it'd be really good to get, you know, a bit more on that. And you wrote about the challenges of like calorie restriction and weight loss for climbing, which is frankly never going to go away. Like, we're always going to have this in climbing. It's like, it's a problem that we're going to constantly have to deal with. But at least nowadays we talk about it a bit more. But yeah, I was just wondering if you'd be happy to share a little bit more about kind of the backstory behind that post.
Yeah. So that's kind of the sad thing about climbing is like, as I was growing up, and that's kind of what like clicked the disordered eating, is just like, yeah, the lighter the better. If you're lighter, you have less to carry, and so the stronger you'll be. And when I was younger, like, I was always like skinny, like I could usually eat whatever I want and all of that and like not put on a gram. But then you go through, you hit puberty, and so that kind of like changes, and then all of a sudden I was like putting on weight but eating like the normal amount that I was eating before. And at the same time, hearing the comments of like, oh yeah, you should maybe be careful on what you're eating, like comp season is coming up. And that kind of just like screwed up in the brain. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'm putting on weight right now. I must be eating too much. And so, yeah, around like 14, 15, I was like, okay, now, like the reason why I say 15 is because I recently found like a like diary that I had, and it had, I think it was 2015. Anyway, I don't remember. It had the year of like the calendar that I had, and in it was like, okay, I am this weight, like 40. I was like around 44 kilos. Like, okay, I need to lose 3 kilos. So then I'm ready for comps. And I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to eat. And I was just like, I didn't realize how bad it was until I like read that. And just gradually over the years is like, you think, okay, I'm going to restrict the calories so I lose weight. But then you keep on restricting, restricting, restricting until like you're eating nothing. And then you start eating a bit more, and then you put on even more weight than what you had before. And it just kind of like continued like that throughout the years until one year, like talking to doctors, friends, and like nutritionists, psychologists, it was just like, you're gonna have to put on weight if you want to get back to healthy. And it's kind of that phase which is the hardest. It's like you've been fighting so long to not put on weight, but you're practically not eating, so you're gonna have to accept to put on weight to become healthy, and then just like balance everything out. And it's like, but within the Swiss team, it's really nice now that we talk about it a lot more. Like Andrea, who also shared like a really heartwarming post, like we talk about a lot of things together. And we recently had this discussion about like weight and everything. And we were like, yeah, I would really like to share more about this. And then that evening I saw a post from like a young athlete where they were saying, yeah, look, I wish I was skinnier as like these other strong athletes. And I'm like, okay, this is it. I need to share because it's not the way to go.
Yeah. I feel like it's really admirable, that phase which you spoke about seeking more professional advice as well. Even though you said it was actually after that was a more difficult spell. That stage in itself, that like acceptance of it, is actually really non-trivial. Sam, like you were saying, or just it's very well known that climbing is a bodyweight dependent sport, so people are always going to be slim, but it's not just linear relationship between how light you are and how strong you are. Well, generally when you're getting lighter you're getting weaker, but there's like a strength weight ratio, and so it's not just like how light you are equals how good you are, and then there's health to take into account. It gets all quite confusing, but it can be really hard to accept that your relationship with eating is unhealthy. I've definitely myself had like quite an intense relationship with food quite a lot, but I find it, the thing that I find really hard is I know it's never going to just be consistent, and like I go through phases where like I can eat intuitively, be like, oh, I want to be healthy and I want to be recovering well and eating well. Food's really important to me in my life. I really enjoy it. I love cooking. It's a way that I connect with my friends as well, like making food for people and just like the social part of cooking as well. Like it's an important thing in my life. There is like an importance to it, but the thing that I find is often it's really hard. The times where I have a slightly more challenging relationship with food, it takes me much longer than I would like it to like actually accept that, oh, right, at the moment I have like a unhealthy relationship with it. But that's only like one part of that process as well. Did it get to a point where it was really obvious, or like is it something which like has oscillated a little bit throughout the years, or was it just quite a clear thing that you, because I feel like you can go for a very long time without really realizing it even that it's like a problem?
Yeah, I only like when I kind of think about it now, like at the time I thought it was normal. Like if you're the whole environment you're in is saying, no, this is how you should eat. This is how much you should eat. You should be careful of this, this, this. Like, it's hard to realize that you've actually got a problem, like in brackets towards food. And that was kind of like I wasn't like also like with my family, like sometimes I was like eating normally, like my parents would cook dinner and then we'd have dinner together. But then it's just also then like the thoughts that you have afterwards, it's like, okay, I ate too much for dinner tonight. Tomorrow, no breakfast. It's like small thoughts like that where I thought it was normal because it's like, okay, well then if I eat too much one day, then I need to compensate in the calories the other day. So then I kind of stay in this like balance of eating less. And it's only now that I kind of realize how bad it was, because it's just every day you're kind of thinking of like where you could cut off, where you could reduce. Like if you eat too much here, then you're going to have to compensate somewhere else. And it's just like, yeah, you can. And like the problem with like disordered eating is that you don't necessarily need to like be skinny or like eat little. It's just also like the thoughts that come into your head and how you react towards food, which is also like also makes the relationship that you have with food and also your mental state bad. And so it's really now like also with talking with friends and talking with nutritionists, where it's like I kind of realized, I wasn't eating a lot. Like 1 year I remember I would just like have broth for dinner, because I was just like, it's light, it fills me up, but it's like good at the same time. And I was like, yeah, that's normal. And now I'm like, what? No, that's not normal at all. But yeah, I think as you grow, you kind of like realize more things. And at the time, you're just like blinded by what you were hearing and seeing from other people.
Yeah, I think it's that thing of it being like a culture problem is seriously major. And I think the only way we can kind of try and make a better situation or better scenario for the kind of younger people coming through is to really quite aggressively try and get rid of that culture that maybe people grew up in the last decade or two. I think it's the best, one of the best things to do is just talking about it, because like there are lots of downsides, as you suggested there, Aidan. Like if you're under fueling, you'll be under recovering as well. Your body needs the fuel to recover. Like you can't get stronger without it. So as Aidan was saying earlier, you're definitely getting weaker, that's for sure. If you're if you're limiting your calories, you're definitely getting weaker. It's just a question of like that battle of trying to get weaker slow enough that you get like a little bit of a benefit. And it's super, super dangerous game. And like the language, especially with young people, and especially those that are like going through puberty, because like they go through that puberty, they put on like a load of weight, which is really natural and like healthy. We've heard little kind of anecdotal stories of coaches saying to people, so they're like, even young athletes suggesting that they shouldn't be eating too much, or like, oh, we had anecdotal suggestion that someone said, oh, you're not gonna eat all of that lunch, are you? And it's like,
yeah,
so dangerous to really impressionable people around that age as well.
Yeah, and it's the small comments, like people don't always realize, but like I remember one morning, like we were having pancakes with the team, and just like a small comment, like, oh, you've had a lot of pancakes there. It's like, it seems so innocent, but at the same time, for the person who potentially had all those pancakes, it's like, oh shit, yeah, maybe I did actually eat a lot. And then it just kind of like, it's just small comments that at the time you think it's innocent and you don't feel like it's going to have a big impact, but for that person who's hearing it, could be the start of an eating disorder. And I got so many messages of like, that's how it started. It's just someone's comment that just like seemed to be innocent to them ended up being the trigger point for the person who was receiving the comment. And I feel like everyone, it's good that we're talking about it more, because now a lot more people realize that they're not actually alone, and sharing experiences just like helps everyone move towards like a better end. But also people need to just like also realize that, yeah, everyone's different. Like people can eat more, people can eat less, like put on weight, not put on weight. And it's like none of your business really how much someone can eat or not. So just some comments, keep to yourself. And
it's like how relatable it is as well. I think it's sometimes quite hard to, you're saying we're all in different bodies, and like everyone requires different amounts of energy. Some people just do eat more, eat less, like inevitably people are expending more or less, looking to other people and trying to like deduce their lifestyle and how much they eat and how much you need to eat is like totally unconstructive as well. It's such an individual thing, and I kind of feel like there's a danger to, I'm not sure you, but you were saying like it, your relationship with it changed quite a lot when you sought professional advice. And I kind of have found that myself. It's like when I take it to my own intuition that it becomes potentially more dangerous than if I actually do any reading or like speak to any nutritionist or someone who is educated in that subject. I've never met anyone who's like, oh yeah, it's better. Don't eat, yeah, to eat less. Don't have carbohydrates or protein after a session. Like, just there's an education element as well, which becomes when people take matters into their own hands through like comparison to other people, that it becomes quite dangerous, I feel.
Yeah, for sure. And like the, yeah, it's especially like talking to my nutritionist that also like made me realize, like we were talking about going through puberty, and like I feel especially for women, like it's inevitable to put on weight through that time. Like you're growing, you need more food, like of course you're going to put on weight. But also I feel like for women in general, there's a lot of stuff that aren't really talked about, like your periods, menstrual cycle and all of that, and how like your body is affected. But also the fact that women have to put on weight for their menstrual cycle and to have a healthy body like for later wasn't talked about at my time. And even now I feel like it's not talked about a lot. And it was really talking with my nutritionist when she was just like saying, yeah, like, I mean, it's totally normal to put on weight during that time because like your body is developing. Like if you want to have a healthy body, healthy bones, healthy immune system, you need to put on weight. And so then you can have like your periods and all of that. And I feel like if we don't talk about it, and especially for like the youth coming up, if they don't hear that like putting on weight is good, it's just detrimental for the rest of their lives. And that starts at like age 10, 12 now for young girls. And it's, yeah, it's big, much bigger than just like not eating and being light for climbing. It's like your just long-term health in general.
It's a big subject. There is an idea that I think we brought up a little bit in, we had a discussion with Molly Thompson-Smith on this podcast, actually, and we kind of ended up discussing a relatively this topic, and we ended up discussing the idea that, because open communication, like I think we like all agreed, is really important, but there's like a certain phenomenon that maybe like some insensitivity around the subject as well. The idea of it being like quite a taboo subject. I feel there's been certain times where almost the proposed solution or like some resolution to this, what is an issue if you've got role models in the sport with quite severe eating disorder and inspiring young people to like eat and train in unhealthy ways, is like a significant problem. Almost some resolution to that had been one of more criticism to invalidate people's achievements due to their own like difficult relationship with food. An example for that might be like somebody wins a World Cup, does really well, and they're really obviously like really light, and it can be quite obvious that they have, maybe it can seem like they could have some disordered eating, and then to almost criticize that and be like to invalidate an achievement, then can create a phenomenon where that athlete feels like criticized for like something which is making them unhappy and them unhealthy, and like it's a real problem for them. And suddenly now it's really hard to open up about it because they feel like they subject themselves to so much criticism from these people, like maybe invalidating achievement as well. So like, I kind of have seen certain indicators of that phenomenon, which feels really damaging for me. Maybe it comes from a good place and people are trying to be like, oh look, it's not, we're not going to put these light people on a pedestal, but it doesn't feel like it's gone about it in the best way. Like it feels potentially more damaging.
Yeah. One of the reasons why it also took me kind of so long to share about it, because it's so easy to say the wrong thing and for people to take things the wrong way. And it's also like the other way around. It's so easy for someone to just like criticize and leave a comment, and then that kind of like if you're unstable at the moment still, like someone can leave a comment and that just kind of like brings you back into that bad mental state. And so that's why like it has been years. I've just like kind of like got notes on my phone where it's just like little sentences here and there that I just start writing down, and just like I've always wanted to share about it, but it's just been in my mind for so long because I was just like thinking of the right ways to share it, the right words, like I don't want to say the wrong thing, I don't want to go too far, I don't want to like bring other people down. And it was just really like that text literally, it took a while. It took me like 2-3 hours to write, but I was just like, okay, look, there's no point of overthinking anymore. Just like write down what you want to write down. I sent it to like a couple of people for them to like read it and let me know what they think. And then I was just like, okay, now post, just because I was like, that's enough. Like that one post I was just like, no, that breaks my heart. Like reading it, I had tears in my eyes, but like, I totally understand that sharing these stories can at one time can like, yeah, help. But at the same time, like depending on the comments you receive, depending on what you say, can just like bring us 2 steps back.
Mm.
And like, it's really important to share it, but at the same time, it's really easy to say the wrong thing and then be criticized and then you feel like shit.
So yeah, I did actually want to talk about that idea because it is scary, and it's one thing to accept it yourself and in the comfort mm-hmm. of being like personal, but to be able to feel secure enough about that to share it with everyone, which is where it like really, or like even just the fact that we're discussing it now, I guess, is where it becomes really valuable, because it becomes way more relatable for people and loads of people can learn from something like that. Mm-hmm. But it takes quite a lot of courage to kind of open up about that to the world. Like, yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, my heart was racing so much. Mm. Like, I copied pasted and I was like, I'm really going to post right now. And then I was like, okay, screw it, and just unposted. But yeah, my heart was racing.
And has it been well received? The people I've spoken to?
It's been really well received. And like, I'm trying to respond to everyone because I feel like it's such an important subject that, like, I've received a lot of messages where, like, oh, but you don't have the time. I'm like, no, don't say that. I will find the time to respond to everyone. Because I really want to pass on the message that like this is important. We really need to talk about it. Like, strong, if you want to be strong, you need to eat. And it's not only about like your body health, but also mental health. Like, there's just, if you restrict, you've just also got so many thoughts going through your head, and it's just like a constant battle every day. So not only is it bad physically, but it's bad mentally. And I just want to be able to pass on good messages. And so it was really well received, and I'm like, with all the messages I received, I'm so happy that people are like opening up and sharing their experience to me. And like, I really hope to continue to, like, I've kind of like thought of other things to share about, but it's like, once again, I'm overthinking. I'm like, okay, how can I share this, how can I talk about that? But just like gradually sharing more and hoping that like more people will want to open up too, which is kind of like the end goal of all of this.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think it's something that you kind of still have to work on, or do you think you've now got to a place that you're like, I've beaten it, it's over? Or is it like still a kind of a constant thing that you have to kind of keep reminding yourself?
I was talking to a friend about this, and like, I feel like now it's more or less handled. Like, I won't ever go back to where I was, and that's for sure. But it's the thoughts that I feel like they stay forever. Like, it's not that they leave and you're like, okay, now I can eat whatever I like and like be free. It's like, okay, if I want to have this chocolate, like, there's always kind of like a thought behind, oh, you know, that's chocolate, that's not healthy, in brackets, because I mean, too much of anything is unhealthy. But I can just like quiet the voices down and just move it to the back of my head and just say, no, this is not the lifestyle that I want. I want to like be happy, be able to eat what I want without feeling bad. And so I've definitely moved on past like the disordered eating, but the thoughts still sometimes remain. Like, I used to weigh myself every day and like look in the mirror and just like sometimes gradually I just stand on the scales and I'm like, why am I standing here right now? And it's just because of the habits that I used to have. And so yeah, you kind of get over it, but at the same time, it's just like, I feel like you just get used to also thinking a certain way, but just are able to push everything, all the thoughts behind, and continue the way you're eating normally. And yeah,
you potentially have like the habitual side of like the those thoughts, but you have like maybe more of like a constructive or rational perspective that kind of supersedes them.
I think it's kind of fair to say that the vast majority of like obsessive rock climbers, they don't have to be elite level rock climbers, but people who are like obsessive about it and do it all the time. I feel like everyone is almost like on somewhere on the spectrum with the eating issues and disorders. Cause like, as Aiden said, right at the start of this, as like a community, obsessional rock climbers are really skinny in comparison to the wide population.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, you know, we're all skinny in comparison to what you would describe as normal. Mm-hmm. And yet the vast majority of us do consider a little bit about what we eat and like not, you know, having like a big day where you just like binge with your mates and you eat way too much. I've seen you see a lot of climbers reading like the calories on the side of things and counting and like taking, and even ones that you wouldn't think would be in the depths of an eating disorder, and aren't probably, they're not like the depths of an eating disorder, but just the fact that people are aware, like climbers tend to at least be aware of what they're eating. And I think for a community that are already skinny, that's probably not amazing.
And I feel like that's just kind of like the environment that climbing, like the mentality that climbing had also like 20, 30, 40 years ago. Like we all kind of grew up then with that mentality. And even those who were climbing 30, 40 years ago, they're still potentially maybe like coaching and they kind of still have that same mentality that they're passing on to the generation now. So it's like, it's still in that mindset. Just people recognize it more as having a problem towards food and talking about it more than things actually changing. But for sure, like you could probably give me any kind of meal and I'd be like, oh yeah, that's probably like 600 calories, just because I was so used to looking. And I feel like a lot of people would be able to do that. Yeah. In climbing, it's just first thing you do, you pick something from the shelf and you're like, okay, how many? Oh yeah, not too bad. Okay, let's get it. And it's sad.
Yeah. I mean, we literally played that game at New Year's, didn't we, Aiden?
Yeah. Like, but it's crazy how, I can't even remember what we were looking at.
It was like a bunch of climbers around at New Year's and we were literally just picking stuff up and all guessing how many calories are in it.
The thing that was bad was like, the thing that I've, not that was bad, but the thing that was shocking was how educated people's guesses were. People would guess, but it wouldn't be like just like a random guess. Oh well, I think it's probably like high in protein and fat, it's like 9 cal a gram, this is 4 cal a gram. What? And then that is actually when I like speak, so my family don't climb, and when I speak to my family, there's just been comments on stuff where like they'd have no idea what the energy comes from in certain foods. They'd be like, oh, I think like avocado's high in protein, and I'd be like, no, it's not. And they just have no idea. Like, it's like, and like, that's fine because like, it's not an issue. It just shone light on the fact that it's on people's minds quite a lot as well. But I would also like to, I did actually want to bring up this idea a little bit as well, because I think it applies quite, I think the idea of longevity is associated a lot with disordered eating, and like you were saying, not even physically but mentally as well. And well, for one, like the whole like physical side of like restricting calories and being light is kind of a card you can only play once. Just an objective truth, if you're not eating enough energy and you're staying really light, you're not going to be getting like stronger and recovering as well as you would be if you were like eating a really like a healthy amount.
Yeah, like that's kind of the discussions that like I used to have like when I was younger with like, I have a really good friend of mine, we kind of like went through the same thing at the same time, and we climbed for the same team, and we were just like, okay, during this phase we can eat whatever we want, but then during this phase we need to like really cut down. And sometimes it's kind of just like games, like you yo-yo Or sometimes it's just like, okay, I'm just going to cut as many calories for as long as possible because then I'm just going to be light the whole time. In both areas, it's, you're still going to end up hurting yourself more physically and mentally because it's just your body just doesn't know actually what's happening. And so like when you do cut, like your body kind of goes in starvation mode, is like, okay, whatever is going to be eaten, I'm going to like stock. And then if you start eating more, then you're going to put on more weight. And then you just like mentally, you're going to be like, oh, damn it, I'm still eating too much. So I cut more. And there's just always like this, yeah, it's kind of linked, like physical and mental, like your brain is never resting just because it's always thinking about like what you're eating. And then in the long term, yeah, it's, you want to get lighter, 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 because then you think that's the only way of getting better. But then there's no progress also like physical, because yeah, you need food to be stronger, to recuperate better, and just to like last longer in general.
Mm.
So yeah, it's so big, and it's like, yeah, there's so much to like talk about and to focus on. Yeah. And to share, but yeah, it's
also just so important to enjoy your life. And with calorie restriction, it's really difficult to do that. I'm going to bore everybody now, but there was a study, really famous study, World War II study, where they you'd never get this past an ethics commission now for good reason. But anyway, they basically calorie restricted a group of prisoners of war. And one of the things they found is that the effect was they absolutely obsessed about food all day. And mm-hmm. what's crazy is it sounds terrible, but then the calorie restriction they were giving them was only like, they needed 2,200 calories and they were giving them 1,800.
So yeah, I remember that. It's 400, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't even that much off. And you think, wow, I think some climbers are doing quite a lot more than that, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, yeah, the point was being like, it's quite difficult not to obsess about food, obsess about eating if you are calorie restricting. So it's difficult to enjoy your life if you're doing that all the time.
Mm. And it's also like, if we like step out of like food, it's like, I tend to be someone who does like a lot in general. And so on a rest day, when I have like nothing to do more or less, or where it's like, I should rest, I'm always like thinking, oh, okay, what can I do to actually like stay a bit active and like to move around and to do this? And it's like, your brain's always like constantly thinking that even though you're just like sitting on the couch, but you're like, oh, maybe I should do this, maybe I should do that, you're not actually resting. And it kind of like compares to like food and to like how it can affect you mentally and physically. It's like, okay, maybe you have reduced your calories and you kind of like move past the part of thinking of it too much. But if you're always kind of like thinking, oh, this, I ate too much, this, I could probably cut there, or how many calories is this and how many calories is that? It's just that there's just so much going on that after a while, it's just detrimental in all aspects.
Mm.
And yeah.
Exhausting as well. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what, yeah. If like you're thinking too much whilst resting, it's not actually rest. It's
positive or negative. Like comps are stressful and intense, and like it's going to be quite full on if you're just adding intensity to that mix. It's unlikely to be fun. Too much stress is, I think most people can agree, is not fun. So
yeah, and once it doesn't become fun anymore, you're like, well, why am I actually doing this? And I feel like the whole reason why I do comps is because I enjoy it. The whole reason why I train is because I enjoy like seeing progress and feeling good. And once you kind of like, if it just becomes too obsessive, you kind of lose that whole aspect of fun. And then it's just, you just feel miserable every second of the day, because for me, climbing takes up so much time in my life at the moment. That at the time, like, I wasn't even having fun climbing. And so it's like, okay, well then what am I actually enjoying right now? And why should I continue? And it takes that whole aspect of fun and enjoying life, enjoying what you do out. And I kind of feel like that's like the main reason to do things in general, is because like, you enjoy doing it, you want to do it, it's like part, it like gives it makes you feel good. And if like you don't feel that anymore, and like if yeah, so like if thinking about food and all of that kind of like has a negative impact on the fun of it all, it's also like a reason to cut it out. Like understand that you can have fun and eat and enjoy life and not have to obsess around everything.
Yeah. Do you think the IFSC are doing enough for it? Because right now they basically kicked the football back towards all of the individual teams, and all of the individual teams have got a slightly different like way of dealing with it. Some are doing more and some are doing less. Like, do you think IFSC should do a little bit more to combat it from a kind of like, you know, all-inclusive stage?
So I also recently had a discussion with the team a bit about this. I was on the call that they had recently about like putting in place the minimum BMI for men and women. And I, to be honest, the effort that's going into it is like, it's a step forward towards the right direction. But I still feel like they don't really know what they're doing or how they're going to proceed or how they're going to take on things. And they were really like relaying it to the other federations of like, yes, you guys should let us know what you think. And to be honest, my first thought when I saw what they were saying is like, oh, then how light can I get to still be in that like frame that they've put in? And so for women, it's 18. The BMI is at 18. And I was like, okay, then I can weigh 45 kilos. That's almost 10 kilos less than what I weigh now. And so it's like, it can have a positive impact of the people who are below the BMI. Like, okay, you guys need to put on weight. But then it can also have like that negative side. It's like,
yeah,
athletes who are thinking, oh, how much weight can I lose? They're like, oh, I have a limit now.
Yeah, it almost like sets the target, doesn't it? It's like, well, then to be at my best, I should be at 18 rather than like that being the minimum. It almost becomes the target.
Yeah. And also like the difference, I mean, the difference between men and women is like women, they you really need like a percentage of fat to have like a proper functioning body. For guys, also, I feel like you have so much muscle mass in general that you would rarely hit the low BMI. But that does not mean that you don't have like an eating disorder or a problem or like too low fat. And that's kind of also the problem with BMI in general. It's not precise enough. Cause yeah, like you could be clumsy. Really fit. Yeah, you could be really fit, really muscular, and then be considered obese to the BMI just because you have so much muscle. But you actually have maybe 2% fat on your body, and that's totally unhealthy. So
yeah.
But it's a complicated subject, and I feel like it's hard to find the perfect thing. And there's always going to be like positive, negative sides on whatever they put in place. But I still feel like it's a step forward.
Yeah, I guess it is a step forward, albeit a clumsy one, as you say. Like BMI is really like, that is not a fine calculation. But we had like a really good chat about this stuff with Mina. And she said lots of the time you could definitely be over that BMI of 18 for sure, but still be in risk of energy deficiency. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's enough. And I feel like I heard recently, because I was listening to the Kyra and Alison's podcast, and they were talking about getting drugs tested. And it's like, that is so intense. Like, if you're willing to put people through that kind of intense drug testing, it feels like you could maybe do a bit more on the BMI side of things. Like you're desperate to make sure that nobody's taking a banned substance, but then you're quite happy to let people potentially hurt themselves in other ways. So I was wondering if maybe they could do a bit more.
Being drug tested is something which is very categorical, right? Like you can be like, oh, well, you take drugs, you're disqualified. And so you can be thorough with the testing, but it's very categorical, the result. Eating, like, we've just the fact that we're here, like, discussing about it for a relatively long, like significant proportion of time, and yet skimming a stone across the surface on a massive subject. There's so much complexity to it. And it's like not categorical. You couldn't screen everyone and be like, oh, well, these people have like a challenging relationship with food and these people are like, don't, they're fine. Like there's not really like such a succinct screening for it. There's also like people who very naturally are very slim and might just be very light and they might eat a healthy amount and not really struggle with their relationship with food at all and be like slim as somebody who has a eating disorder and hard to generalize, I guess.
Yeah, and that's, I was gonna add on to that, like I did receive a message from a couple of people saying like how they are naturally skinny and they want to put on weight, but no matter like what they eat, they just don't. And so it's hard to say, okay, because you're low here, you have an eating disorder. It's not black and white. It's like a lot of gray. And I feel like that's kind of the issue with all of this, is that it's really hard to say, okay, well, you're out because you're too light, or you're in because you've got enough. But like, you could be kicking someone out who doesn't have an eating problem and then keeping someone who actually does.
Who does, yeah. Like, that's the thing, is that BMI is so clumsy that it might as well just be someone walking along a line and going, that person looks too skinny, they're out. Like, it's not really much more scientific than that, is it? It's very basic measurement.
Yeah, and that's where I feel like it needs to kind of start changing within, like, the national federations too, like talking to your athletes, being open about it. Like, I feel like within the Swiss team, we've managed to be able to like really talk about this, or at least like I have with some other athletes openly. And also now like talking more about it with the coaches, and like the coaches, like, of course, like I can't comment on whatever happens in other countries. Like, I don't know what everyone's going through, whatever, but I feel like if coaches started to have like a stronger stand on like their athletes, because you see your athletes quite often, like you can kind of know what's going on more or less and just like be there and help and talk openly. And if like we can kind of put that more in place, I feel like that also will start like moving towards a better future in climbing. But since I don't really know, like I do know like some federations where it really is focused on weight. And I've talked about that with also a lot of athletes, but like within Swiss team, with like our coaches who are really behind us and ready to listen and to talk, it helps a lot as an athlete.
I think there's a real importance to address these things on a personal basis, right? There has to be a lot of trust. Like, it's a very personal thing, like in the stage where you feel vulnerable and you can't just express that to everyone, or you, to feel like confident to like express it to someone you trust is maybe a bit easier. You right at the start of this conversation, you summarized journey quite succinctly, your like journey with or your relationship with food and how that changed. You were saying that with acceptance came like speaking to nutritionists and coaches and kind of professional advice, and then how that's how you've arrived at like the situation you are today. And in terms of looking for more functional advice for people who maybe are aware somewhat of their difficulties with food, do you have is there any parts in that journey that felt quite pivotal for you, or felt like they were real like stepping stones to managing that?
It's really hard to say, because I've been talking with a nutritionist for like years. And I remember when like my doctor has sent me to the nutritionist, I was still so convinced in my mind of what was right, that whatever she told me, I was like, okay, you can tell me whatever, I'm just going to still do what I'm doing right now. And so I really feel like the first step for like an individual, at least, is like self-realization. And of course, like my parents helped a lot, also talking with like friends who were going through the same thing, like just randomly with a friend, we kind of like realized we were going through the same thing, and we talked about it a lot, and we also helped each other get through it a lot, and just slowly opening up. So I mean, if you don't realize that you have a problem, you're never going to listen to anyone else. So that's for me, like, and it's hard. It's really hard to realize that you're going through something. But definitely talking about it more and listening to what other people say, that helps. And then once you kind of realize, the big part for me that changed was once again then talking to my nutritionist. And like, we did that. I went through a body scan. I didn't do BMI. I did like a scan on my body. And she was like, look, this is your percentage of muscle. This is your percentage of fat. This is how much your body burns resting. And then add on all the sport that you do. So you're around this range of like calories you burn a day. You need to eat that much. So I was like, okay, that's actually a lot of calories. Like, and then I started like this could go badly, but then I started like counting like the calories, but just educational wise, because I wanted to see, okay, then what does like 2000 calories look like in a day? And I realized, okay, that's actually a huge amount of food for me, at least. Cause like I'm still short and not necessarily, but I mean, I eat a lot for someone who's short, but like, I was like, okay, 2000 calories, I can have like this, and just like, realizing that this is how much food my body needs. And then it also went a bit more into detail with my nutritionist. Is like, yeah, protein is really important and like carbs for energy. And like, I kind of got the whole educational side of it and I was listening this time. And so then it was kind of like a mix of everything, realizing, okay, how much I can eat, what I can eat, how much my body burns, how much I spend. And it's just like small little dots like that that kind of brought everything together. And I was like, there's no need to overthink about any of this.
Yeah. Oh no, that feels helpful and helpful for people listening who maybe struggle with that kind of thing as well. I guess it's education that is, isn't it? Being educated of what you actually need. And we actually spoke really near the start of this podcast to a nutritionist I work with, a guy called Tom Herbert. Because I'd worked with him a bit in the past, and I got like a body scan as well, like one of those DEXA scans.
Yeah, I got the DEXA too. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, right? It's like, well, it's like an MRI machine. It like scans your whole body and gives you like bone density and like so much detail. Like,
I want to really get one of these.
Yeah, it's
really interesting.
Sounds really fun.
It's really fascinating. And I think I said it on maybe that episode or maybe the episode of Molly. Before that, I'd kind of been aware that I'd had a tendency with taking matters into my own hands. I'd have a challenging relationship with food, or it would be like play on my mind a lot. And so I tried to be like really scientific about it, make sure I'm recovered properly and fuel properly, and have like a strategy of like systematic to be like light for a trip, to have like trained and recovered and like kind of been quite considered about it. And I had a strategy, and then we'd spoken about it and we'd been like, oh, actually, if we're going to be scientific and strategic about this, we should have a good foundation of like know where you're at. And it was all kind of based on hypotheticals at that point. Anyway, I had this scan and it really changed the strategy. Like you were talking about earlier, I have a pretty high BMI. I can't remember what it is. It's like either 21 or 22 or something. It's kind of high. Maybe it's 20. But like, no, it's actually, that's not high. It's normal. But you can see
it's
it
like
even
no
though.
Normal,
that, but yeah. That's totally normal.
Yeah.
I can't really remember what it was. The strategy we'd originally had was essentially losing weight up until a trip, and then realized after this scan that that's actually not healthy. I shouldn't be losing weight at all. Having that objective knowledge is not something you can argue with. Like you were saying, you can walk to your nutritionist and be like, they might tell you this, and this. And you were like, oh, well, you're not me. You don't live my life. I know like what's going on here. But when you have a scan with a load of data and it's like, wow, your body fat is this. If it goes below this, that is unhealthy. Mm-hmm. Then you're like, oh God.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have any room to play with here. Well, like, you've got to take intuition out of the picture. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess speaking to a nutritionist is probably that, because if they're educated and they know what they're talking about, like, they'll probably know well, what they tell you will have a foundation in science and not intuition. And
yeah,
if it's anything, trusting intuition isn't always best.
Yeah, that's what I really like with the DEXA scan. It's just, it just shows how everyone is different. Like, bone density gives you the weight of like how much your bones weigh, like how much the fat you have on your body weighs, how much your muscle mass weighs. And by doing that, you'll just be able to see that everyone's completely different. And what I really liked with my nutritionist, and totally respect her for that, she was like, okay, look, here we can see your body fat. If you go any lower, I can't work with you anymore. Like, that's my like rule. And I don't work with anyone below this percentage. So if you go below that, we're done. And I was like, totally respectful, because I was like, okay, I mean, I totally get it. Cause she's like, then you're putting harm in your body and I don't want to like have anything to do with it. But of course, I mean, she would still help to push me in the right direction. And I'll be like, okay, cutting you off, totally, goodbye. But she was just like, just letting you know that below this body weight, below this body percentage of fat is unhealthy for women, and I'm not encouraging you to do whatsoever to go below that. And yeah, having science behind it helps a lot, and that's what I've really like enjoyed recently, is like watching videos but based on science, instead of just like random TikTok videos that you watch where it's like, if you want to lose this much weight, you need to and it's like, no, let's put all of that aside and watch more educational videos. Like, I really enjoy watching Dr. Huberman. His podcasts on YouTube, and they're like so interesting, and it's all based on science and all of that. And so I've kind of more gone into that direction, which has also changed compared to how I was before. I would just be like, based on what I read on Wikipedia, 1200 calories is the way to lose weight. So I will do it this way, this way, this way, and stick to that without like doing any research behind, knowing exactly what my body is like. And I feel like having also that switch has also helped a lot.
I just wonder if every team that did have the funding, because obviously it would be expensive, but imagine if like every team that had the funding gave all of their athletes a DEXA scan, obviously you know, not in public, obviously, like anonymous, you know, and then they had a chat with a nutritionist. I wonder if that would really help. You know, they wouldn't have to disclose any of it, but it would be quite good if they went in there with all those details and the nutritionist just talked them through it. Because it sounds like your nutritionist was pretty hard line, but I reckon that would probably really help, that attitude, you know, that kind of like, you've got to be.
I think it would. It's like, of course, it depends on financial status in federations, but I feel like if it's important for everyone to have healthy athletes, it's like you're putting so much money into training, because training makes you stronger, but also feeding your body and fueling your body properly also makes you stronger. So why is that not as important as like training? And it's also like the mental side. Like, we don't also realize how strong your brain is. Like, your brain is a huge muscle that if you don't train it, it won't get any stronger for like comps. As much as you need to invest in the physical, you also need to invest in the mental, because it's just like mental training and a muscle that will like get stronger as you train it. But at the same time, like, okay, you're not training and eating. I mean, you can more or less, but it's still an investment to be made for your athlete to be healthy and move in the right direction.
Even from the sake of performance, psychological side of climbing is really been very much neglected, celebrated as much. People think like, oh, training or like preparation for climbing is so heavily based in boards or like weights or fingerboards, just like these feats of strength, even aside from like the well-being. The psychological side of climbing is huge. The amount of things that we don't do which we're physically capable of is incredible. The amount the mind can like influence all these other things, and like our enjoyment of the sport, is crazy. But it's something which, yeah, like you say, people are more likely to buy a training plan. Yeah, they're likely to spend a lot more money on loads of other things before they'd even consider getting a DEXA scan or speaking to a climbing psychologist.
Yeah, the training aspect, you can see it. You can feel it. If you're like in the fitness gym doing weighted pull-ups, like if you go from like, I don't know, 10 extra kilos to 12 extra kilos, then you can see that you're like progressing in finger strength. If you like are able to add more weight for the same amount of seconds, you can see the progress. So you're like, oh, I must be getting stronger. Although like the mental, you don't actually know anything, but it's just you trust the process. And it's like, if you don't do it at training, what's going to make you think you're going to be able to do it at comps? And that's for anything. Like if you don't train, you're not going to naturally be able to do it better in an important moment of life. So like for me, comps, for example, and I think we really forget that the brain is a muscle, and as much as your biceps may grow by doing more weighted pull-ups, it's not like your brain's going to grow out of your skull or anything. It's just you're going to feel it better. Right. Like my mental state in my day-to-day life has also changed just because I've worked on it in climbing. And yeah, we kind of neglect that side a lot.
Yeah, there's lessons you learn from it, which like extrapolate, right? Be into your everyday life as well. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean in that you don't feel it. It's not obvious. There's no metrics, which maybe like people kind of like, did this like training protocol and I put on this amount of extra weight and like it's something that you could put a finger on. And you maybe don't have that so much. It like oscillates a bit more with a more mental side, I guess, of climbing. But that feeling when it does go to plan, either you climbed well or climbing felt like in a state of flow or like climbing felt effortless, or even in a comp where like maybe even your result doesn't go well, but you're like, wow, I'm really like happy that I managed to deal with this pressure and like I didn't do boulder one and two, but I was able to keep positive and like kind of still like climb well. Those feelings are so satisfying. At times I'd have those and I'd really cherish them, but like I'd almost put them down to luck.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I just had a good day. Everything just worked out, and never really put the time into being like, oh, actually, this is something I can practice on as well. But it does make a difference.
Yeah, definitely. And the hard thing with mental, I find, is that, like you said, you can have like a really good, strong mental day and then say, oh, yeah, based on luck, because after doing that again is really hard. Finding that same mental state is hard to do. And so you're like, oh, yeah, it must have been just a good day, even though, no, it's just training that takes time to find the right thing that works for you.
Do you work with a sports psychologist at all, or is it?
I work with a psychologist that specializes also in like sport, but also depending on the like I was talking to one of the coaches, like sports psychologists, they're also like very focused on performance sometimes, and so don't always kind of have like a healthy aspect towards an athlete. I mean, this is just kind of like theoretical, but like if you're aiming for performance and doing well, it's like a sports psychologist would help you to attain that. But then like say, oh yeah, well, oh, this is really hard to put into words, but kind of like push you to do what you need to do to get those results, instead of kind of like saying, take a step back, look, this is also bad for your mental health kind of way. Because like especially when I was talking with my psychologist talking about like food aspects and all of that, I was like, there was this phase where I was like, okay, comp season is coming up. I mean, it wasn't even like, not like a couple of weeks ago, I had a discussion with my psychologist and I was like, oh yeah, so I've injured my fingers. And then I was telling her how like my thought, I was like thinking, yeah, the only thing that I can really do now is maybe like drop a bit in weight. And so I'm like, I'm thinking a lot about food too now at the moment. And it's kind of like added extra stress. And at the same time, training isn't necessarily, like it was a phase where training wasn't really going well. And she was just like, okay, look, stop, slow down. One, training isn't going too well. Two, your fingers like are sore. Three, you're adding an extra stress of thinking about food. Like why? Like why do that to yourself? Why add the extra pressure? Like you're just going to, even though you want performance, this is not the way to like go get that. And yeah, so I was kind of just like saying sports psychologists may sometimes push you in the wrong direction. But I mean, that could also just be totally theoretical and not all true, but
yeah, I suppose the decision
that we had.
So the theory being that potentially the sports psychologist would help you towards winning more than helping you towards happiness, potentially.
Yeah. Kind of like the discussion. We had like a big discussion on that. And that was kind of like the things that came out, and where I was like, yeah, well, I'm lucky to have landed on like a good psychologist. Like, it took a few to go through. Like, I went through a few, but she's a psychologist, and but also like specializes in like sports and all of that. And so that could be also a difference between the two.
It's an interesting point.
Some health and well-being, the foundation, as opposed to performance only.
I came up with a really stupid idea to try and fix the problem. this is daft. Wait,
you came up with it during this discussion?
Yeah, I was chuckling about it. Sorry. Imagine if... Okay, bear with me.
I have no idea what you're
going to share. This could go anywhere. Suspend your disbelief for a moment. Imagine if I was in charge of the IFSC, I would do the calendar, I'd do the comps, and then on like April 1st, before all of them, I would schedule one in Cape Town. And then like a month before, I would cancel it and say, all of you guys were prepared to fly across the world to compete in one comp in Cape Town. We're cancelling that event, but you can spend the money that you've now saved on your psychologists, your nutritionists, and your DEXA scans, and you'll still save money.
Wow. Yeah, I'll actually like that idea. I mean, you'll have to edit that bit out, because if anyone listens to it, then they'll just be like, well, I'm not going to book my flights.
Yeah.
A bit of manipulation, but at the same time to go towards a good goal.
Exactly. Imagine that. That'd be great.
There's a few flaws. There's a few flaws in it, but
yeah, the people who all bought tickets who are looking forward to watching it in Cape Town might be a bit disappointed.
Or like flights. If you bought flights, are they refundable?
Oh yeah. Shit. Oh god, imagine if I did it and then no one could refund it. I was just there like, oh god.
All you've done is support the airlines.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good cause. It's heading towards a good cause of like wanting to see more.
There's a few wrinkles that might need ironing out. I've got like 2 weeks to put on an event in Cape Town.
But like you say, okay, the sentiment, I guess, being that the amount of investment, financial and mental, that people put into the physical side of training and like kind of going to these places, actually, like, it's like a DEXA scan is expensive. Maybe it's like £100, but like the amount of people that will spend that on a load of other stuff is crazy. And like, kind of like for a federation, say if they've got a national team, like that isn't a significant amount of money to pay for your athletes. If that is like kind of something that feels responsible, and like would help people, obviously you wouldn't just get a DEXA scan and leave it at that. There'd have to be like a support network, like you say, or like psychologists. Like, you can, cliche, you can't put a price on health. With health comes like longevity. Happy people are probably gonna eventually be better climbers as well, if that's what a federation is looking for. You kind of hope that they're investing in athletes' happiness as well. Yeah, I get what you're saying. It's not that much, considering.
It's all about like the priorities they're willing to invest in. And so like your idea is, now that you have actually spent the money, well, or like we're willing to spend the money for that and you don't need to, here, invest it in something good. And it's like, people are willing to invest in a new pair of shoes, a better, like better material, or like better gym clothes. Like, you could spend so much money in that, but at the same time, like, put it to something that could help more. And like, especially when it comes to federations, like, okay, maybe it's good to have training camps, here and there, but maybe then it's also good to then take that money and just like invest it in different things like nutritionist, DEXA scan, psychologists, and talking to that. Because I mean, when you take all of that, it is expensive. And if you don't have the financials to pay for all of that, then you're like, oh, well, I'm just going to stick to what I know instead of spending money in the unknown and potentially not having an outcome. And which is, yeah, also like a bit sad because then it's just like based on money and yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's the last thing you want to set up is a situation where countries and athletes that have more money are in a better position. Like that's always going to be the case, but it's trying not to set up a situation where that's definitely the case or like making that any worse than it already is. I mean, the IFSC could give some of that Discovery Plus money to this, but I think that ain't going to happen. But just, I think yeah, the Cape Town round's more likely.
Yeah. In dreaming world, but yeah.
I'm kind of aware of the time. Is there anything else that you wanted to add to kind of like sum up that section, or should we just move on?
Yeah, I guess sum up was kind of like said before, it's just like you need to invest in yourself. Yeah, just to be able to help yourself and move on and go towards a better future self. But that was a really bad sum up. But
what about you, Aiden? Have you got anything concise and profound?
Oh gosh.
Right now, preferably.
No, we almost
think about it.
Yeah.
I love that you're going for it. You're just gonna I'm gonna go in.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no. I think that was well summarized. Yeah. We covered a lot of stuff. Hard to summarize that concisely.
I've got nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. You can summarize it in that like 90-minute chat we had on that subject. Yeah. Make your own conclusions.
we just have a couple of questions from some of our Patreons. Mm-hmm. One of them hasn't come up at all. Do you, our patron Max was asking, do you climb outdoors much?
No. The short answer to that is no. The longer answer to that is I finished my bachelor's at university last summer. And so anything before that, like time was very, very precious. And so I would just invest all of that time into training. And I was like, yeah, no, outdoors, not for me at the moment. But now that I've finished my bachelor's and I really want to like focus on climbing a lot, I would like to go outside a lot more. Like I was in Waco Tanks for 2 weeks in February and like I really enjoyed that. And then we went to Bloor with the team the week after that. And like I really enjoy climbing outdoors. I just now is more or less the time where I've really only had time to go out, or at least I wasn't focusing much on outdoors because I had other things that I prioritized. But now I'd like to go out a lot more.
I'm thrilled with that answer because it goes to show we don't listen, everyone. We don't just talk to people who give up on comps and just climb outdoors all the time. We can do both. We can do both, I promise.
Yeah.
I love both. And you're in quite a good place for it. Geneva is quite close to a lot of good climbing.
Well, do you want to hear something shocking? I've never climbed at Magic Wood.
Wow.
That's never, yeah. What about Ticino? Have you climbed into Ticino?
I've been to Ticino, but like once.
Yeah, there's some good stuff.
So I definitely want to go. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, it's not embarrassing, but like, yeah, I live in Switzerland and say, oh, so you must have been to Magic World. I'm like, no. Never.
I also just love that Aiden understatement of the century there. Like, oh, Ticino, yeah, there's some good stuff there. Yeah. It's one or two okay things in Ticino.
It's kind of fun.
Says the guy from his van in Ticino.
Yeah.
I've been here for 6 weeks. Love it. But yeah, even closer to Geneva, there's stuff in like the Alps and like mm-hmm. Falaise and
yep.
You're not even so far from Chamonix, I don't think.
No, I'm even closer, yeah. I've been to Valais once, two.
But I actually can totally relate to that as well. When I was doing comps, I was like very rarely climbing outside. Trips were more like holidays than like actual to do climbing. And comps can be all consuming, I get that as well.
Yeah, it's all about priorities at the moment.
And there's time in off season as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You may or may not have an answer for this because of what you've just said, but Max also asked if you had like an outdoor dream boulder.
Yeah, no, I really don't.
That's cool.
That's like people.
Oh, say new baseline.
Oh, but that is actually Eric told me to try that boulder out because I think he did a video.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that would be a good one for you to try.
Yeah, I don't even know what the boulders look like. Like, you could throw out names. I probably heard of it and I'd be like, yeah, sure. And I don't even have an image. Otherwise, like, compared to other people, like Nils, who's on my team, you say, oh, this boulder. And he'd be like, oh, yeah, this hold is really good and this hold and the method is this. And I'd be just like, never heard of it. Sorry.
Nice. Yeah, I've climbed it. I climbed a little bit with Nils at the start of this trip. But yeah, he's a really keen outdoor climber.
Yeah. Yeah, totally different people here.
Different world, yeah. But, you know, the rocks aren't going anywhere.
Exactly. So, no, I don't have a specific... Anything hard that I could potentially send is interesting for me.
new baseline, that's a good one to try.
I will write that down.
serving the meme of this podcast, and we try and mention that almost every time.
It's Sam's nemesis boulder problem because he can't fit his fingers in the cracks.
I whinged about it in one of the first episodes and then it's come up basically every episode.
Every time. I'm lucky to have skinny fingers.
Yeah, that would really suit you on... put that on your list. But we also have a question from Ronja who asks if you would be interested in trying to qualify for the Olympics.
That is also a very good question. I would, of course, like the Olympics is like a really big goal and being able to participate there. But at the moment, I really am focusing on bouldering and really wanting results in bouldering. So I guess it all depends on how this season goes. If it goes terribly, then there's absolutely no point whatsoever trying to qualify. But if it goes well, I mean, why not try and open up to lead a bit? But for now, the main goal is results in bouldering. And yeah, depending on how that goes, objectives may change. But like, I feel like the World Championships is like bigger. Like, I'm more excited for that than Olympics. I don't know if that's really rational, but for now, that's at least how I feel.
Yeah, it's fair. You're not doing any lead this year then? It's just
that's bouldering. Not the plan, but if bouldering goes really 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 well, like, why not try? But I'm not on the lead team, so I'd have to like go through selections and all of that, so that also depends.
I'm actually like, what you said there actually kind of resonates with me in terms of my like intrigue in these events as well. Like, I think I'm way more interested to like watch like the bouldering world championships or like even the lead world championships than I would be to watch like the combined boulder and lead in the Olympics. Like, I think I quite like purity of like a single discipline and like people specializing in a certain style. I think I've always quite enjoyed that.
Munich, the European Championships last year, when they did like the combined final, I was just like, yeah, okay, this is okay-ish. I was like more interested in watching like the bouldering finals and like the lead finals than both of them combined for some reason. But yeah.
We just got to really hope that the next Olympics, they'll get the full split. That'd be really cool. All three disciplines.
That would be the best.
What would that be, 2028?
Yeah, LA.
Ooh, LA.
I've already calculated I'd be 30. So
In your maybe. Prime.
Maybe if I'm still climbing.
Oh, who knows? No. You're not that old at 30, Jesus.
Sam's just turned 30.
You're just done. I just immediately hang up your shoes at 30. It's over.
No, but it's like Aiden, you're turning 25 this year, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's still young. Like, I totally understand that's young, but hitting 25 for me is like,
yeah.
My gosh. This is like a quarter of a century. I feel like it's big.
Yeah, 20. So, yeah, you're not a kid anymore. Like, I kind of still feel after like a that, kid.
I'm like, oh, it's old in brackets.
Oh, sorry, Sam.
This is outrageous. That's a violation.
Sam just looking devastated.
If turning 25 hits you hard, turning 30 is going to hit you like a sledgehammer. It's way worse.
But we've got 5 years to psych ourselves up for that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like once I hit 25, it'll just like go back to normal. I mean, I still feel 18.
Yeah. Crazy to think that that's almost 7 years ago.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, like 2010, it feels like it was yesterday. No, 13 years ago.
Wow. Yeah. Mm. Time. Passage of time. Sorry, Sam.
It's a life.
No, but we are young. Yeah, loads of time. Yeah. All of us, yourself included, Sam. Yes. We're young. Got loads of life, yeah.
Yeah, I'll get back into the comps.
Do it.
I'm planning my comeback in the next
four. For sure, you should.
Yeah. Setting up that foundation on the schoolroom board.
Show who's boss.
That's where the comps should be.
Yeah. Perfect.
Do you have any other questions? Are you out, Aiden?
I think so. We discussed most of the stuff the patrons put on. I think we discussed early in the conversation.
Yeah, I would have to apologize to the patrons. I didn't give them very much warning at all. So
no, actually, you don't need to apologize. No, I apologize. I confirmed this interview this morning.
Yeah, but last minute's sometimes good too.
Yeah, we'll call it spontaneous.
Exactly.
That's kind of a little bit more glamorous.
Thanks so much for giving up so much of your time. It's really kind of you.
Well, I said, all I'm doing now is climbing, so I have more time at least.
Yeah.
Well, we wish you the best of luck for the season.
Well, thank you. Hopefully it goes well.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Yeah. I hope the last couple of weeks training goes well and resting as well. And
rest is important right now, so that's why.
And enjoy a new place as well. I guess you got a week in Japan first.
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah, that's gonna be so fun. Bit of a holiday.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was talking to coaches and he was like, you know, it's not a holiday, we're like preparing for a comp. I was like, yeah, of course. I'm taking this seriously. Can't wait to eat ramen and like go to cafes.
But maybe like also that's what you needed. Like if you just sit in your hotel for a week stressed about the comp, not going to climb as well as if you're just like roaming about, enjoying yourself.
No, I can't wait.
Awesome.
Yeah, have fun. Yeah, well, yeah, lovely to speak to you again after so long.
Yeah, and, likewise. And it was really fun talking about all of this.
Yeah, have a nice evening. And
thank you. You guys too.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.